Shaquan and NSK on 102.9.
It is 8:33 on Namibia's Heart and Soul. Thank you so much for choosing us. Above Average Radio exists only here. That's on Fresh FM, Fresh Breakfast with the NSK and Shaquan. Now, we did promise you a conversation that's with an incredible woman. Seeing that we're in the midst of International Women's Month, and we've been making it our business to highlight, and whether it's victories or issues that that women experience on a daily, the Namibian woman for that matter, and we've been doing it since the beginning of this month, and we will continue to do it until this Friday. Now, one such person, there's no way we are going to have International Women's Month and have conversations about women in Namibia and not have this particular person in studio. She is what we call an incredible person, human being. Let's just first start off there. let's just start off there. She is an incredible. That's a leader. She's since I've known, since a very very young age, I've always known this woman to be extremely vocal about societal injustice. She's always been extremely vocal about offering solutions, even for that matter. And I think for people like myself who have watched her journey, it's not really a surprise to see where she is today. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, young and old, Fresh FM, Fresh Breakfast, NSK and Shaquan has the pleasure of welcoming the Minister of Information, Communication and Technology, Her Honorable Emma Tefillas. Good morning. How are you doing, Osi Emma?
I'm very good. How are you doing?
good.
Wait, fine. She doesn't get an A horn?
Oh, no. You said, I'm getting there. There's no way she's not getting an A horn.
I mean, there's a queen in the building.
There we go.
Before we get to the formalities, okay, comrade, we're not doing that. She's a queen. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
How are you feeling this morning?
I feel quite good.
Is it?
Yes, I think it's a good start to the week. Probably because at the end of the week is my birthday, so
nice.
You share birthday month with my daughter. That's incredible.
She's an Aries. She must be a firebrand.
She is. Oh my word! Great. Nine Khurat Kop giving me headaches. Okay. Anyways, Osi Emma, thank you so much for accepting my invitation. It's a conversation that we've been wanting to have with you, and I think it's just perfect alignment with the International Women's Month.
Absolutely. So you know, we have seen you. And this is like a lot of people like miss the fact that Emma has actually been on our screens since she was like in high school. That's where I actually recognized you from Comas High School, right?
Correct.
So what would you say are some of those personal experiences that you've had in your life that just really inspired you to step or to take up space in the political space?
Well, I think first it didn't start with, you know, a mindset to say I'm going into politics. It was just a realization when I was about 13. And I was at an after-school center where people from the Ministry of Justice and the Legal Assistance Center came to visit us to inquire about children's views on the Child Care and Protection draft bill at the time. And I remember learning about rights for the first time and all of these things, and it fascinated me. And from then on, you know, they talked about, you know, what our rights are, what our responsibilities are, and how it's important to use your voice.
Yeah.
And by then already, I was already class captain or leading.
Except for
your CNG. Overachiever.
You know? Yeah. And usually I would speak on behalf of my colleagues. Because even in that workshop, you know, I was speaking on some of my colleagues about, you know, what children go through and how we think it's important for us to be respected or listened to or to be heard. And, you know, from then on, it just, you know, started this journey of inserting myself in spaces where I think, you know, progressive conversations about children and young people I had. And activism turned into being policy adjacent and quickly turned into politician. So it wasn't necessarily planned, but it was a path that was leading into that.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't think I was going to be a member of parliament so early on. Maybe later, after I've done a legal career. And I actually embarked on my legal career because of that experience of understanding that laws are important. They're meant to protect you and look after you. Mm. And that's been the journey. And yeah, I cannot tell you, you know, step by step, this is what I did and this is why I did it. No, I just saw an opportunity to advocate, to speak.
Yeah.
And when I spoke, people listened. Mm. And I took it from there.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, look, I mean, if it's one thing that follows you everywhere, is this the youngest and female taglines. Mm-hmm. Okay, they follow you everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And one con, especially for me, for us that are so analytical, we've always wondered, does it annoy you or do you embrace it? You know what I mean? And I'll give you an example. One good example is conversations that we have in the entertainment space right now where female DJs are saying they don't want to be termed female DJs because it sort of kind of takes away
the
radio.
Yeah.
I'm a DJ. Respect me as a DJ.
Yeah.
Is that the same with you or do you embrace it or do you look at it somehow differently?
I might look at it a bit differently because when we talk about glass ceilings, it's primarily because of that, that there's some demographics in society that are not represented in certain spaces.
Mm.
And when they do get into those spaces, we must be able to celebrate them because representation matters. And once representation has started to grow and there is some equal balance of power, then maybe you can say, okay, we don't always have to celebrate you for actually breaking this barrier and breaking this glass ceiling. And I think that's important because in many spaces, whether it's the entertainment industry or the political space or the entrepreneurship business arena, there is still power dynamics that are different. Me being the youngest and youngest female, I'm outnumbered in my space. So we must take cognizant of that in order to either create certain protections to allow me to survive in the space and actually create for more space for others to come or I'll be the youngest female and I go out and there'll be no other for a while because actually the space, took a shock to having this type of demographic represented. And it comes with challenges. And that's why I think it's important to celebrate those who break barriers until we have a substantial number of
balance,
the youngest, only female, or now it's 4 or 5 females, to actually then celebrate. I can give you an example. Like for many years in the banking industry, whether it's at executive level or even a CEO, there were never females. It was a male-dominated industry, the financial industry, especially the banking, was male-dominated.
Yeah.
Only a few years ago, we saw one female CEO of one of the major banks.
Yeah,
then we saw two.
Yeah.
Then we saw three,
Standard
four.
Bank,
and now we don't call them female CEOs of
anymore.
A bank.
Yeah.
We just call them CEOs. Because they've actually broken the ground.
Yeah.
And now it's been normalized. But as soon as in some industries it's not normalized, we must continue to put pressure and constantly celebrate those that are there. So we invite more to enter the space. Because representation matters.
You are celebrating you.
That's why
Thank you.
It's 8:41 on Namibia's Heart and Soul. We've got the Minister of ICT in the studio, Her Honorable Emma Teofilis. Stick around. Don't go anywhere. This conversation continues right after this.
The problem with running a successful business.
Hello there. The Heart and Soul of Namibia.
It's 8:44 on Namibia's Heart and Soul. Thank you so much for choosing Fresh FM. We appreciate it. This is where it all comes together. We've got OC Emma Teofilis, Honorable in studio, the Minister of Information, Communication and Technology.
Mm.
Now, before we took that break, Emma, you explained your different take on these taglines that follows you everywhere. Youngest, female minister on the continent. And I think it's a very different way of looking at it, and I applaud you for that. But at the same time, I need to ask you this. You know, these titles, young and female, do they make you an easy target for online gendered abuse?
Absolutely. I think the first time I was appointed in 2020, just because of age, there were questions about capabilities. Can
How
I deliver?
Time?
I was 23.
23,
yeah. So it's already being young was a problem. And then secondly, being female, there were comments about, she better be careful about, you know, the space and, you know, the older men in the space. And but that's not said for older women, you know, necessarily, who are married or established and so on.
Yeah, yeah.
So just the age alone was a factor. Then the gender became a factor again. Then on top of that, a few years down the line, people would nitpick on how I would dress, ask when I would be having a baby, ask when I would be getting married, all of that. And it's not something I see either with either my male counterparts, who are more or less the same age, who are unmarried, who no one cares if they have children or not. But for me, it's such a topic of discussion. I could post online about serious work business, and half of the comments would not even engage on the subject matter. Yeah. It's a complete other thing. So absolutely, the insults are there constantly. And although it happens to everybody, it does make me an easy target because people feel I'm quite young and that I might not have the track record in politics as many of my colleagues to actually, and just also a cultural thing.
Yeah.
As a society, we respect people who are older than us than those who are probably the same age or younger. And just because we probably think they cannot have the exact same amount of knowledge or wisdom or understanding around certain issues. So it is a paradigm shift, because I think there has been a change. When I recently got appointed as minister, I think the conversation was a bit different. Because then now it was not abnormal to have somebody under the age of 30 take up a ministerial position. I was 23 and a deputy minister. I'm now 27. And minister. So, and the portfolio helps. It's ICT, it's futuristic. And I think the conversation has changed. And I can confidently say, in this next election, if we are to have a 23-year-old come again as deputy minister, I think people will be more receptive than they were, unlike they were to me when I was first appointed.
What do you think prepared you for this position?
Now as minister?
As minister.
Well, I think being deputy minister for 4 years was quite valuable.
Yeah.
Yes, I was a trained lawyer. I worked for a law firm for a little bit and the Ministry of Justice for about 6 months before I was appointed as deputy minister. And I knew generally how government works as an outsider and as a civil servant at the time.
Yeah.
But never as a policymaker, a member of parliament, deputy minister. And that role, where you basically guide policy at a higher level, look at more the visionary, you know, trajectory of your institution and where you want to go in terms of your mission, came in very handy for those 4 years. One, during COVID-19, where literally I learned how government works in nine months because there was no room to do anything else. You know, you learned, you know, how laws were passed in times of emergency, of a state of emergency. I had time to sit down and look at the ministerial work before and what we can look to do after. And that helped. Now that as I'm minister, thank God, in the same ministry that I know very well, it comes in very, very handy to know that I know how the ministry works. I know almost every employee in the ministry.
Yeah.
I'm acquainted with, you know, the work we're doing in the past 4 years. And even though I've only 12 months, I'm able to prioritize what I'd like to achieve. So being in the system for a while helps, but also learning, you know, the how the system is shaped to know where the opportunities lie, where the gaps are, and how you can change it, although the change is slow and is not so evident immediately. It comes in handy to have been in the space for four years.
For 4 years. You know what? I'm thinking about what you said a little bit early on, like in terms of you could post something pertaining to work and it's serious business. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then, you know, half of the comments, for like you said, just questioning when you're going to have kids, when are you getting married and so forth.
Yeah.
How has that impacted your mental health? And I know that, you know, when you come out in public, you're supposed to be poised and, you know, well put together.
Yeah.
But genuinely, how has that impacted your mental health in the long run? And how do you kind of deal with it?
Yeah. Remember, I was appointed at a time of the pandemic, coronavirus, literally all over the world. And literally just jump into work, you know. You have to now know what to do and, you know, how to do the work. And at the time, also, you're losing loved ones and people you care about. And it's a new job and it's an adjustment. And it's all these negative comments on and off. I think the biggest grounder has been my support system, which is my family. I don't come from a political family.
At all.
So they don't always...
You're the little odd one out.
Yes. So they don't always also understand, you know, like what happens in the political space. And I'll come home and explain. And they're just like, okay, we just see what you do on television or what you do on radio.
Yeah. That's good. That's good. That's good, right?
Okay, yeah. Okay. Exactly. So them actually not knowing has also been great, because when I get home and I tell them a little bit about my day, we don't talk about politics the whole time. We talk about family and other things, just like a normal family.
Yeah.
So they've been a great support. And even if they don't understand what's happening, they're always in my corner, supporting me, cheering me on, and whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then, of course, it's actually learning very on that I must actually have some rituals, not in a negative way, but things I'm unwilling to compromise on to actually take care of my body, my mind. If it means I'm sick, I need to take sick leave. I mustn't push through because this work has to be done. So when I'm sick, I need to take sick leave. When I'm saying I'm going to take my holiday leave days, I must take the holiday leave days and leave work behind. If I say that for this next month, I'm going to cede social media to somebody else to manage and I'm not going online at all in order to focus, I have to do that. If it means that this particular day, I'm actually going to need to sit out a work day and actually compose myself and stay at home and take the necessary sleep I need to take, because unfortunately our work is not 9 to 5
or
Monday to Sunday. You could work Sunday to Sunday basically some weeks, and then, you know, following that you are fatigued and you need to take a day off. I do that. So it took some time to actually allow myself to prioritize that in order to be sane. And that has helped me. It took a while, and sometimes there are mishaps here and there where you just feel like, you know, I need to do this. It cannot wait. But honestly, it can wait, because if you were to drop dead, somebody else will do the work.
Come on.
Definitely.
And we saw it this year on a national scale. That mantra. Because I mean, now that you mentioned that you had to force yourself to try and sort of kind of accept that you have to take a day or two off. I mean, there are colleagues, some of your colleagues that did say that you're a bit of a workaholic.
Did you ever feel pressured to work overtime to prove yourself?
Absolutely. Yeah. And it really stems from that, because people don't believe you are able to deliver. People think you're going to mess up. People believe that you're not going to last long because you're going to make a big blunder. So you constantly have to be cautious about every decision you take. You have to read things through over and over to ensure that you actually understand what's going on. You have to be careful with the sentiments and things you say online or public platforms.
Yeah.
You're constantly, you know, even in meetings, you know your things to the T, because the moment you're saying, people say, you see.
These young people know nothing.
You know?
Yeah.
So constantly being at the top of your game. And that's really what caused that, actually being, you know, so invested in the work and going the extra mile and doing more, because you must actually demonstrate that as young people, we deserve this space and being a member at this table. And that really means, you know, knowing your stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, look, at the end of the day, you are human, okay?
Yeah.
In as much as you are our national leader, in as much as you handle an important sector for us as a country moving forward, you are allowed to laugh here and there, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which brings me to my question, okay, before we bring in the news and continue with this conversation after that. You said you were thrown into this thing, okay? Baptism of fire. What blunders did you do that you can laugh about right now? Like, it's okay now.
Yeah.
Like,
You can, I mean, you didn't lose your job.
It didn't cause any national security. Yeah. It didn't, you know what I mean? But you can laugh at yourself right now and be like, oh my goodness, instead of saying good day, I said hi in your email. Yeah.
Well, I've thought about this, and I can say I didn't do major blunders.
Okay.
Thank God for that,
just
honey.
Because of being very diligent and careful.
Yeah.
But I remember one time we accompanied the late president of the Hagiji Game Cup to a mission abroad. And, man, I don't know how we mixed up the titles of this, you know, major people he was engaging. And I was meant to leave
from foreign missions.
From another country. I won't say the country.
Yeah, that's fine.
And in doing so, I was leading the conversation before introducing the second minister and before the president comes in to actually then
take over the conversation. Yeah.
I don't know what I said in terms of title. In my head, I have this sorted. I know who this person is. I practice reading their name. I know their title. And, man, I gave him a lower title than the title he has.
Not a lower title.
And that's such a, diplomatically, that's such a blunder.
Yes.
And when he came to speak, he corrected me. And I remember getting this side eye from the late president. And I'm thinking, I'm not going to survive this trip. this is probably the last one. But he was gracious enough to say, you know, these things happen. And you're still learning. Young lady, you're still learning. But diplomatically, that was such a blunder. And I remember after that, making sure I go to the person I confirm, sir, you are the prime minister. Even after I Google, because now I immediately go and Google to make sure, does a face match the name and the title?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, but let's be sure.
But
such things happen. And a few others along the way. But yeah, it was really trying to be diligent, but it didn't work out.
Yeah, diplomatically, they take those titles very, very
seriously. It's such an offense.
Diplomatically and in the army, space. You cannot, you are not allowed to give me a lower title.
Absolutely.
It's 8:57 in Namibia's Hour and Soul. We will continue this conversation right after the news. We've got Osie Matiofelis, our minister of ICT, in the studio.
Gratitude and respect.
It's 9:05 on Namibia's Heart and Soul. Thank you so much for choosing us. We just had the news. Thank you so much to Future Media News. We're still having a conversation that with OC Emma Tufelis, Honorable Minister of ICT. She's in the studio highlighting International Women's Month. And we're asking all the questions, all the uncomfortable questions. And it's questions that we hope will plant a seed.
Yeah.
And it's questions that we hope will continue in WhatsApp groups as we go about our different lives.
Mm.
Now, before we left for our break and for our news break, you were sharing fond memories of how you made your first blunder, and luckily, you know, in that case, you were caught at that grace, especially. And if you think about the grace that was accorded to her, Sheikh Kwan, it's in a space that is, it's a very high temperament space. You cannot make mistakes.
Yeah.
Right. So I have to ask you this question, just to move away before we get back into International Women's Month.
Mm-hmm.
Your working relationship with our president, our late president.
Mm-hmm.
How would you describe that working relationship?
The working relationship with the. Hageba, Akhaba. No, it was a great working relationship. His Excellency the President had such faith in young people's ability to lead. And I felt it. I thought, like many newspapers would write, or many people would write to say that my appointment was tokenism, more cosmetic, to just appease the youth at a time like that. But the respect he accorded me in the way we interacted, when he would ask for advice, how to deal with a certain issue and what the young people would think in dealing with a certain issue, in him actually, you know, listening to what I'm briefing him about and actually taking action, was a clear indication that he didn't see me like a placeholder. He actually viewed me as someone he can take advice from and that he could actually bounce ideas on to take a particular decision. And he was such a teacher. Every opportunity, every interaction, he would tell you about his experience during the liberation struggle or, you know, even as president or prime minister or his time when he was at the World Bank. He used every opportunity to demonstrate that what you're dealing with can be solved. What you're, you know, dealing with, you know, it's just normal in this leadership journey of yours, and that you should be careful of this and that and that and that. He was constantly giving advice, constantly giving guidance. He is the type of president that you could send a text message, you know, saying that I'm stuck, I have this issue. If it comes to your table, this is the context. And he will say, thank you very much, Deputy Minister. Yeah. I'll look at it once it comes to my table. Thank you for giving me context. That was the type of leader he was. And it wasn't just my working relationship with him. Mm-hmm. I think you saw during the memorial services and the 3 weeks of mourning that was a common theme across everybody, as testimony of their working relationship with him.
With him, yeah.
But he was also not, you know, wishy-washy president. I mean, if you didn't do something right, he will call you for it. He'll call you out for it. Mm-hmm. And he will also correct you. Yes, it will be tough. You'll get some bit of tongue lashing, but it was necessary for you to know that this is serious business and it has repercussions, you know, for the future of this country. So he was that type of leader, but very warm and embracing, and is able to give you grace, really, to say, ah, I understand you are still finding your feet, you know, or to say, ah, you've actually done this a few times. Why are you still making the same mistake?
Yeah.
You know, so it's somebody who was quite fair in the way he was dealing with people. You know, I remember one time we were having a conversation with a group of people, and we both started speaking at the same time with the president, and I immediately kept quiet because, I mean, and then he said, no, please go ahead. I said, no, come here, president, please, you know,
please, yeah.
Go ahead. And he said, no, I'm listening to you. Go ahead. I didn't expect that from somebody who, you know, held such a position to actually believe that, you know, they could actually step back and not continue speaking and give me the opportunity. Yeah. It felt, you know, it sounds small right now, but in the space, you will understand.
It affirmed a lot for you.
Yes, you would understand that, oh, actually, this person is stepping back to allow me to speak. So, yeah, he was really that kind of leader, and I'm very grateful for the working relationship we're able to have at a time in my life where everything was quite new. It was an adjustment.
And
he was the leader I had who actually gave me the opportunity and believed in me and was there for me those 4 years.
Now, speaking of leaders, hey, who would you say is a female that has really... A female that has done great before you, like, you know, before your time, obviously, that you look up to.
So when I was at university, I stumbled upon in the library on a book by our former Deputy Prime Minister, Dr. Libertine Amadila.
I knew it.
What a woman.
I read that book literally, I think, in less than a day. And it's a thick book. I'm forgetting the title now. It was a few years back.
But it's her memoir, right?
Yes,
like it's the her one memoir. with the gray hair on top. Yeah, yeah.
Man, and I started paying attention to this lady. And I remember, and I used to frequent the Parliament Library a lot. And I'd go into the Hansards and look at the contributions she has made. At the time, also when she was a Minister of Health and then also as Deputy Prime Minister. And I was just fascinated by this woman, and she didn't disappoint. Almost year after year, she's building schools and hostels.
Dude.
She is, you know, constantly being this philanthropic, you know, giant in our country and being selfless. And just, I think, 2 years ago, she called me and she said, no, Emma, I have this stuff in my house that I collected over the years that are, you know, I think would align with government buildings and so on. Could you send someone to come and get them?
Can you believe this, dude?
And I said, ah, yeah. Yeah. Auntie Libertine, I'm coming myself. I'm coming to get it. Yeah. And we sat down at her home and we chatted and it was so beautiful. Mm. And again, when I saw her recently at the memorial, it was so nice to see her. Mm. And although she's aging truly, I think the mark she has left on the Namibian people,
but
also on me personally as a young female leader, where I want to be in a few years, how I want to move after I've probably done my service in public service and I'm retiring or moving towards retirement, what I want to continuously give back to the Namibian nation is she is the type of person I want to emulate. And she is really definitely someone I look up to, even up to today.
Mm. I'm just thinking here, going back to just in the earlier bit of the conversations that we had, where you mentioned some of the comments you would put on serious Namibian business stuff that we need to know as a population, mm-hmm. and out of the comments would ask you, you know, about your sexuality or about your family and, you know, the fact that you're a woman.
Reproductive
organs and so on.
Brave young.
So, can you imagine? How? Freedom of speech, I guess.
Land of the brave. Sorry.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But let me ask you this. The invincible clock is always a factor when it comes to women.
Mm.
Okay? Mm. Depending on, obviously, which part of a woman she is, maybe in a career. She doesn't want to get no kids now. Mm. She wants to focus on her career. But now there's pressure from the family. Are you under any pressure to get married because of the nature of your job, especially getting married, kids, whatever? But really, the fact of you're a minister and you're in this public service and you must have a partner and you must be an honorable man that is of stature. Mm.
Well, it's sadly a cultural thing that people would actually have certain expectations of unmarried women versus married women and view them in a particular way in terms of their leadership capacity. I look at a former Prime Minister of New Zealand. She was unmarried in her role and she was able to hold it. The former Prime Minister of Finland, also unmarried, but was able to hold her own. For me, I would say for a very long time, I tried not to be pressured into doing anything. I remember I took this decision when I was in high school and there were so many expectations in terms of, oh, you're a head girl, you have to make sure you pass well, and people put you on a pedestal, and that dealt with my mental health a lot because I was not doing things for me, I was doing things for other people and in order to satisfy their expectations and whatever. And when I took that conscious decision, I freed myself a lot from expectations on when to have children, when to get married. And thank God I know people that have held positions, even in our current cabinet, who are ministers but are unmarried. And that is comforting to know that I would not be an odd one out and that no one has done it before me. So for being who I am and who would like to live life at my own pace and beating my own drum, I've actually taken that conscious decision not to rush into anything, not to feel pressured about anything. Of course, the questions will be there and the expectations will be there and they'll, you know, be heavier in your heart and mind because you must constantly face them and explain to people
why
not and why not now and why it's not a priority. But no, I'm under no pressure with the invisible clock. I'm very comfortable with the life I lead. And I'm very happy to have, you know, other ways in which I can self-actualize and be who I am without fitting certain boxes of society. And, you know, by 30, by what? Nah. I know so many examples of people finally living the lives they always wanted to live at 40 plus. So I'm constantly, you know, constantly looking out for articles, constantly people's lived experiences, human beings I can actually meet and talk to tell me that whatever pressures this society gives you is not worth it. You only lose yourself in the process and settle because you're under this pressure. I'm in no business to settle.
Yeah.
But I'm also have so many examples of people who are unmarried and living wonderful lives. And because I'm knowledgeable about the stereotypes surrounding people like myself and women particularly, because these questions will never be asked a man who's 40 years old. Ah,
that's true.
When are you getting married?
That's true.
It's almost like
you're 40, you know. Yeah.
So it's almost like bachelor.
I know, right?
You know, it's celebrated, it's accepted.
Families hold you back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But for you, it's almost like
I know.
Will your career survive if you're still unmarried?
Like, yeah. But you know what's crazy about that?
Yeah.
Is the fact that dare you get pregnant.
And then you're not married.
And then,
exactly, right?
No, it's not going to slow you down.
Can you see the double standard?
Yeah,
when it comes to women.
I see it now. I see it.
Women and leadership.
Mm. Yeah.
And it's a never-ending cycle.
Yeah.
And then if you do get married, then they'll say, yeah, now she's just focused on her family. Can she deliver on the job? Can we ever get a break?
Yeah, it's always something. But like now that you even just, it's quite refreshing hearing you say this, because man, the Namibian girl child is being raised in a completely different way. Like you have to attain that man, the kids, the what, and then you're successful, you know? But how do you feel the Namibian girl child can actually take up more space this year?
Well, it's I think it's a beautiful year because we have an election coming up. And although you don't participate in the election itself, I would say as a girl child, this is the time to posture yourself, to start asking questions, going to manifesto launches of, let's say, various parties if you're not affiliated to a party. Mm. Educating yourself about, you know, the electoral process, about, you know, government and how it operates. Going to parliament and just going to sit in the gallery and watch parliamentary debates. Actually prioritizing your education. Because whether we like it or not, a Namibian child who's educated is able to circumvent against many of the things that continuously hold us back.
Yes.
A child who stays in school longer has a likelihood of actually earning more in their career than one that doesn't stay in school longer. When I say longer, I mean actually finishing grade 12. I mean actually getting some university degree, whether it's a diploma, postgrad if you can. But that increases your earning capacity. And when you increase your earning capacity, you're able to leave a relationship that doesn't serve you anymore and probably not put yourself at a higher risk of the risks that come with abusive relationships emotionally, financially.
Being dependent on your partner.
Dependent on your partner. That puts you at so much risk.
Yeah.
Not that this responsibility solely lies on the woman or girl child for that. No. Men should take responsibility for their actions, and we must hold them accountable. But it reduces the risk. Just like we say, you know, if you take certain foods, it reduces the risk for certain diseases.
Yes.
You know, not that, you know, you know, you it's your fault when you get a certain disease. You're just taking
preventative measures
to try to protect yourself. And that's important and that is valuable, because what are we trying to do? Preserve your life and future at this point.
Yeah.
So the Namibian child, educate yourself. Find a way into politics, because whether we like it or not,
it affects everything.
It affects everything. Mm. Policies around girls' education, health. You know, just let's say if we to decide, if I promise you, if cabinet was 70% female and parliament was 70% female, sanitary pads would probably be free by now. Right? It's because we can relate to the issue, not condoms, but sanitary pads. Can you see that? Depending on who's making the decision and who sits in the walls and stands in the walls of power. So as a Namibian girl child, let's start posturing ourselves. And I continuously am a catalyst in that, because I have a Bring a Buddy to Poly initiative, bringing young people, not only girls, because a lot of people say, Emma, you just like girls and you're always women. Okay, granted. Bring a Buddy to Poly is an initiative to actually bring young people to parliament. The first cohort was young people from conservancies.
Okay.
Who live in conservancies.
Literally live in conservancies.
The second cohort was more wider, rural and urban youth come to parliament for about 5 days. They get workshop training, they meet parliamentarians, they watch parliament live, they're able to appreciate the space. I can tell you the transformation after that. Yes,
the way they walk, the mental,
they started doing their own projects in their communities. So, and I know this because I was exposed to that.
That's literally how that, you
that's exactly how I started. So I know the value in that. So as a young Namibian girl child, man, get yourself educated, but also start posturing yourself around politics, because we need more girls and young women and women in politics.
The remark that you just made right now, where people are pointing fingers at you and saying, yeah, well, Emma, you just like girls, you know, what about the boy child? Socially, there's been debates, you know, about woman empowerment. And the notion is empowering women depowers men. Where do you stand with this notion? Because it's a notion, it's something that we've debated, Shikwan and I, since the beginning of March, in different ways, do you understand? And you sort of kind of get the feel that men on the ground have this feeling that they are being depowered. Walk us through your thinking and your thought process with this.
I'm very happy you asked that question, because like your debate in studio, it's also the same thing I encounter every day, that, you know, women are being empowered more than the boy child. There are so many women empowerment events as opposed to the men empowerment events. There's a question number one. What is stopping men from coming up with their own empowerment?
Ooh, what she said. Sorry.
Activities. Because can you see how unfair it is that we women see that there are many inconsistencies and imbalances in so many industries. We want to level the playing field. And in doing so, we're now being said, well, why are you not bringing the boy child along? Again, it's men wanting to give women responsibility to actually look after.
And all we've been doing is carrying them.
Absolutely. Sorry. So men, please, I encourage you. The way women go out of their way to find sponsors, to take out time in their busy schedules, to actually do small women breakfast, girl child, what. I encourage you men who are in high positions in most of these industries, that have the capital, that have the ability to do so, to please go out and do empowerment projects for young boys. Because also us, we realize it, that the more we leave the boy child behind, we're unable to achieve what we want to achieve, to level the playing field. And I repeat, we only want to level the playing field. We don't want to increase the power of women over men. What's happening is, men have had a privilege, and we all know this male privilege. It's a fact. If someone wants to deny it, it's a fallacy. They're not being honest. What's happening is, now that there is power, is not a full cake that you cut in half and give half of the cake away and only keep half. Power is that we are both able to share the cake and indulge in the cake together. What is happening to men is that they're seeing that they are being forced to share this power. It's not being taken away, just to share. And they hate it, and they're unfamiliar with it, and they're unable to contend with actually sharing this power. And that's what now in their mind feels emasculating them and actually making them lose the power they believe that they have. Just number one, you realizing that another person is being empowered shows that they've not been empowered before. They've been struggling to be empowered. And now that they're being put to your level, you are being threatened and feeling like that's not fair. So men are not being depowered. They are being asked to be equitable in the power that they have, and they're refusing to do so. And you see it with any grouping that had some level of power. Look at BEE. You know, previously disadvantaged black people coming to share some of the economic power. It was such a big thing that, all of a sudden now quality is going to be compromised. Why? Because now black people can come and actually participate in the economy. How? You know, anybody who had some level of privilege once they start being forced to share that privilege,
it's a pushback.
Yeah, it's natural. Mm. It's natural, but we must find a way for there to be no retaliation, but for them to actually start seeing that me lighting somebody else's candle doesn't mean I'm dim my light or takes away the light already I have on my candle. Mm. It doesn't. You're only sharing the fire that's already on your candle into the next candle. You lose nothing. Mm. And that's what's happening. So those are my views about it. And there's so much work that needs to be done. And I cannot see it being achieved even in the next 20, 30 years, if I'm being honest. Mm. Because it's so complex. Because although we translate it at, for example, as industry, in politics, in the bank and so on, it must still trickle down to society in general. Then it must trickle down to community. Then it must trickle down to household. Because I can be who in the office, but at home. So all of that, there's so much work to be done at such a nuanced level. And that's going to take time. And I acknowledge that. But we can't fold our arms and say, well, because it's not going in.
Well, because it takes long, we might as well not do something. No.
We have to try. We have to work. Nothing comes easy.
We want to talk to Emma the whole day.
Yeah. Emma's got a big girl job now.
I promise
she got stuff to do.
Emma Teofelis, thank you so much for your time. There's so many follow-up questions, but you know, in the interest of time, and you know, this also being a private platform, we really want to appreciate you for making time for us, for Fresh FM, for the Fresh demographic listener, and we know what you're doing, we follow what you're doing, we see what you're doing, we know the road that you've walked. And we can see the journey that that you're about to embark or that you're busy embarking. And we wish you all the best. Mm. I think for Shaquan and I, it's really, we celebrate where we need to celebrate. And we give flowers where we need to give flowers. And honestly speaking, please accept flowers from us.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, just continue standing on business. Take up space, more space. Mm. And do not extend that SIM registration deadline. Because we had time, okay? We had time. Don't do it.
You heard it from Shakwa, not me.
Funny enough, we will actually have civil society in tomorrow to hear their part of the story, why they are against SIM registration. But anyways, that's the beauty of democracy, isn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. Everybody needs to have their time.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Emma, thank you so much for your time. You're honorable. Thank you. We appreciate you. We wish you all the best.
Thank you so much, NSK Shaquan. Very happy to have been here with you this morning.
Awesome. It's 9:30 on Namibia's Heart and Soul. If you missed the conversation, no, I'm kidding. We will put it up on our website, and then you can check it out and study it for your previous soul. Let's leave it at that.
My dream is pure.
Shaquan and NSK on 102.9.